Calls for police reform are rising again following the beating death of Tyre Nichols. Today, the president is meeting with members of the Congressional Black Caucus. And at Nichols' funeral yesterday, Vice President Kamala Harris called for passage of the George Floyd Police Reform Bill. The Reverend Al Sharpton also spoke yesterday, calling for police reform no matter how long it takes.
We don't care how long, but I can tell you one thing. Those of you that keep voting against that bill, we're going to vote against you. We got more numbers than the police union.
And joining us now is Yanilda Gonzalez, professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, who focuses on policing policy. Professor, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me.
There are calls to revive a bill called the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. It did not pass last term. What are the key pieces of what's being proposed?
The George Floyd Justice and Policing Act is really notable because it's one of the first federal efforts that we've seen in a very long time to try to address policing at the federal, state, and local levels. So some of the key pieces of the legislation are a ban on chokeholds, an end to qualified immunity for law enforcement, which in short just kind of protects individual police officers from being held personally liable for their acts of misconduct. It also bans no-knock warrants in federal law enforcement, and really important is the creation of mandating data collection on acts of police misconduct and police violence, as well as creating a registry of police officers who engage in misconduct and who are fired so that they cannot simply, you know, leave one agency, be fired from one agency, and then go be hired by another police force in a different jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. At the state level, local level, have we seen signs, encouraging signs from your perspective of policing reform?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think the issue that I've mentioned, qualified immunity, for example, this was one of the sticking points that prevented the George Floyd Act from passing in the Senate last year. But this is something that has been tackled at the state level. For example, California passed legislation, I think, in 2021 or 2022 that ended qualified immunity for police officers. We've also seen, however, that this hasn't worked in every state. For instance, in Massachusetts, they did not successfully pass. Not only did they not pass qualified immunity in their police reform, but they also just kicked the can down the road and said, okay, we should revisit this issue in 2 years. But nevertheless, we've seen some encouraging signs, such as the creation of civilian commissions that can certify and decertify officers who engage in misconduct so that, as I mentioned, they cannot simply go and leave one police force or be fired and then be hired by a police force in a different jurisdiction.
Now, we in the news media, I mean, we cover these events of excessive force. Americans know the names Eric Garner, Breonna Taylor, now Tyre Nichols. The Washington Post has done its own tally suggesting that 3 people a day die at the hands of police. Do we know, as far as the data, whether this rate is increasing?
It's actually very difficult to know that because we don't have kind of a historic or systematic account by the government of how many people are killed by police each year. So, for example, I always tell my students this: if I want to know how many tornadoes were there in Alabama in 1909, I can look it up and I know that the answer is 14. But if I want to know how many people were killed by police last year, I cannot actually get that information from a government source that systematically collects that data. And so while the Washington Post and others who are collecting this data in more recent years, these are heroic efforts. Because of the nature of this information, it's hard to know if the increases that they are observing in their databases are due to just better reporting in the media, for example, better reporting through public records requests, or have there actually been an objective increase in the number of killings.
In your view, is there something that is driving, encouraging the use of excessive force?
I mean, I think it's a number of things. One of them is the kind of broad legal leniency that police have to use force. Essentially, to put it in plain terms, police know that if they use force, they will get the benefit of the doubt, legally speaking, right? There are a number of Supreme Court cases like qualified immunity, like Graham v. Conner, which establishes very, very high bar for judging police use of force. They know that they are ultimately, legally speaking, going to receive the benefit of the doubt. I think more broadly, though, we have to, as a society, as a political system, we have to rethink what role we want police to have in society, right? At the core of policing is the use of force. You know, any scholar of policing, they will tell you that the use of force and the authorization to use it is central to policing. So now what are we saying as a society when we say, come police into our schools, come deal with our mental health crises, come deal with our homelessness crisis, come enforce our traffic laws? We're essentially opening the door for use of force to be used in an ever-expanding number of scenarios, right? And so I think that we have to have as a society a broader conversation and a broader consensus about when use of force, use of policing is and is not desirable and appropriate. And I think that if we were to come to the conclusion that we were opposed to such expansive uses of force, our politicians would react and we would in fact see reduced uses of force as we see in other parts of the world.
That's Yanilda Gonzalez, assistant professor at the Harvard Kennedy School. She focuses on policing policy. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much, Scott.